Stand by. Awesome. Thank you. In my experience and observation of discipleship, following of Jesus, it's easy to let the day-to-day requirements or responsibilities of our lives get in the way of things like supporting mission work or supporting even just the mission of God in our local neighborhoods. And I've been wondering a little more about why this could be the case, and I wonder if it's partly to do with how we see ourselves in God's story, whether we see our value, whether we see our necessity in it. After all, we know God is all-powerful and God is able to do whatever God wants to do. God is love, and God doesn't get distracted by idols like we did, like we saw in Haman. Thank you for the correction and pronunciation, Roger. God is on the front lines, getting the work done. And so sometimes it's easy for us to think, well, yeah, we are pretty finite and nothing like God in many senses. And so we can undervalue the place that we have in God's mission. Or we can look at other people who seem much more spiritual or more Christian, whatever that means, and think, oh, I'm not like them, and so I can't be like them even. I'm not someone who is going to go overseas onto the mission field. And so, again, that undervalues the place that we have. I wonder if we can get bogged down in those feelings of devaluing ourselves because we don't see the truth that God in God's wisdom and grace has chosen each of us to be involved in some way. God's love for us means that we are needed in God's work of reconciliation of all things. And no matter the role that we play, we have value. And nobody else will be able to do it the way that you can, with your gifts and your abilities and your passions. God calls people to the front lines that we looked at last week in Esther. And yes, God also calls people to support those on the front lines, in whichever way we can. And so today we conclude our reflections on prayer and self-denial, and I've been really encouraged by a few conversations that I've had with some of us who are thinking about what self-denial looks like for us. Because sometimes it could be easy to just go, I'll put the $4 to $5 of coffee aside, but actually that doesn't feel like that big a deal. So what does it actually look like to deny ourselves in this space? And so I've been really encouraged by the way that you have been prompted to reflect on that this year. And so even though our specific focus on the NZBMS missionaries through this process concludes today, I hope that we'll continue to reflect on how we can deny ourselves for the good of the work of God's reconciliation in the world. And of course, here in New Zealand included. So as a recap of the last couple of weeks, we began our reflections considering what modern idols might be in our lives. And we looked at Haman and we saw his self-entitlement and we saw his greed. And we saw the idolatry of self in the way that he presented himself and behaved in the story of Esther. And I wonder what God has highlighted in that process or since looking at that for each of us that can become an idol in our own lives, and how we can continue to work to not focus on those things and bring more focus and glory to our God. Last week we looked at the risks of being on the front lines of God's activity, and we looked at Esther and the risks that she took by approaching the king to plead for safety for her people and of course herself. And we wondered what risks God might be calling us to take in order for us to be a part of God's reconciling work in our world. And today, as we conclude, we're invited to consider something of the support role that Mordecai had in Esther's story. Mordecai, as we probably know, was Esther's caregiver until she was forced to become queen. And so he had this very much support role right from Esther's young age. In considering his role, and we can acknowledge, as it was in the video, that for most of us, it is not about traveling overseas to engage in mission. While at home, though, we are called to support those who do, who are engaging in the gospel work overseas, and of course, looking for opportunities to engage in that here in New Zealand too. If you've read the story of Esther, and if you haven't, try and read it in one sitting. It's really, really a great story, really beautifully constructed. But you'll know that Mordecai is one of the trigger people who causes the drama to happen. And so this morning, as we look at his support role, we're going to look at a few different parts of his story. And we meet him in Esther chapter 3. Yes, verses 1 to 6. And he's commencing a protest. After these events, and that's where Mordecai finds out that there's a plot to assassinate the king and reports it. So after these events, King Xerxes honoured Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honour higher than that of all the other nobles. All the royal officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honour to Haman, for the king had commanded this concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honour. Then the royal officials at the king's gate asked Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's command?" Day after day they spoke to him, but he refused to comply. Therefore they told Haman about it to see whether Mordecai's behaviour would be tolerated, for he had told them he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him honour, he was enraged. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom of Xerxes. Throughout the story of Esther, we are given no reason to explain the reason for the way the king honored Haman, and therefore the reason that everyone had to pay that homage to him. And it suggests that a system was in place that was not particularly just. It was rather good if you happened to be a man who was on the good side of the king. And those who weren't in that position had to suck it up, basically, and behave accordingly. But Mordecai, for whatever reason, had decided not to play the power games that he was expected to. His refusal to honour Haman can be seen as an act of protest against the injustice that he sees into society that he was living in. It brings attention to it without him having to explain himself. When he is asked, he basically ignores the question beyond saying, "I'm a Jew." And I was lucky enough last week to find a dramatic reenactment of this protest. So it's a little bit hard to see, but Roger was in the role of Haman, throwing quite the tantrum there. Well done. As I was running, I messed up the mic. Mordecai's small protest began the movement that would end up saving the Jewish people throughout the Persian Empire. A small act highlighting injustice which could have seemed insignificant. And in the past week or so, I've seen a couple of protests happen. The first being Mike King. I don't know if you heard about this, but returning his medal of the Order of Merit to whoever takes it back, I don't know, that he had received for his work in the mental health advocacy space. And he was calling attention to the ongoing experiences of people with significant mental health challenges and the lack of results from the work and the funds that the government has promised. Someone standing against injustice in our society, and not an exact analogy to Mordecai given King's celebrity status, but it is a person who is willing to put things on the line to highlight the challenges that he sees in our world. And of course, this week, We've seen our many nursing staff, 30,000 nurses, being engaged in protest in their strikes regarding their pay level and their working conditions. I imagine most of us have been up to Wellington Hospital at some point and seen the fact that there is no end of work for the medical professionals to do. And they're often in incredibly stressful situations as well. It's just dealing with panicked people who are struggling with the fact that a loved one is unwell. And I saw that the starting salary currently for a registered nurse is barely above the living wage. And in Wellington, the living wage doesn't really enable you to live, as the reality as well. These essential workers, despite the cost to themselves and the risk to the patients, they saw protesting as their only way to highlight the situation that they are in. And so, like Mordecai, we need people to be standing up against injustice. We need people to bring attention to the problems that are in our world that are sometimes easy for us to overlook. Mordecai's more public support role started with that protest. And so each of us potentially have the ability to bring attention to things that are on our hearts that need to change. We're not celebrities, most of us, or any of us that I know of particularly, and we are not a large group of people, but we need to be asking, what is it that God is placing on our hearts that we can bring attention to, that God's reconciliation needs to come into? But of course there is risk. There is risk in sticking our necks out. And we see that in the way that Mordecai was pushed around, but gave Haman the ability to enact his plan in the story of revenge against him, but not just him, the entire Jewish community. But Mordecai didn't run away despite the risks that he experienced. He engaged in another act of protest, I would say. In chapter 4, 1 to 3, am I going to be able to do this, Fred? Sorry. Yes, I've got it. Thank you. chapter 4, 1 to 3. When Mordecai learned of all that had been done, this is about the plot to kill the Jews, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and ashes, and went out into the city, wailing loudly and bitterly. But he went only as far as the king's gate, because no one clothed in sackcloth was allowed to enter it. In every province to which the edict and order of the king came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. Many lay in sackcloth and ashes. Lament in Scripture is often referred to by commentators as an act of protest, calling out to God, seeking to remind God of the promises that had been made. And this public expression of lament, even though, like we said last week, God isn't mentioned in Esther, but this was a way of the people calling out to God for deliverance. And this time, this protest gets the attention of Queen Esther, who was able to do something about it. I wonder what it is that is breaking our hearts enough for us to lament publicly, so that others, perhaps people with more power than we do, are able to do something about it. And if and when we do get someone's attention, how would we use it? Mordecai, as he gains Esther's attention, who, as we looked at last week, Esther was a little bit hesitant about what Mordecai was suggesting that she does, he challenged her and he encouraged her to do what was necessary at great risk. He didn't shy away from what was necessary. And when we read this passage last week, but listen to the challenge that he issues to Esther when she expresses her hesitation. When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer: "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this? Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai: "Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions. Mordecai reminds Esther of the need, and his relationship with her enabled him to speak powerfully and quite bluntly to her, and resulted in the action that would see the Jewish people being saved. The relationship he had with her enabled truth to be told in a way that resulted in action. I wonder how our relationships within ourselves, within our community, is. How are they? Are we able to speak that truth to enable action and change? Have we built trust? Have we showed care? Have we expressed the love of Christ to each other and to others enough to be able to call each other to account, as Mordecai did to Esther? His actions gave Esther what she needed to be able to do what she did on the front lines. His support of her throughout her life, his willingness to be active in the support, can be a model for us. Because we aren't all heading overseas with NZBMS or other mission agencies, but we are called to support those who do. We're also called to work on the front lines here at home. But I wonder what risks we are willing to take to highlight injustice in our world. And what ways can we support those who are working against it? What role is God calling you and us as a faith community to participate in as God continues to reconcile all things to God's self? It's not easy. It's not risk-free. But the transformation that the Spirit of Christ is bringing and will bring is worth taking those risks. What is God calling us to?